The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website at jonathanfaust.com. While you're there, you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. Thank you and enjoy. A bunch of kindergartners were once asked this question, why do you have a body? They had a long discussion, and they came to the conclusion that having a body was really helpful because it made your head portable. It's a pretty good description of Western medicine. They kind of have this mechanistic view of the body. And there are so many different techniques about in meditation and being aware of the body. But a number of people have asked me recently, they've just noted in their practice that they have a lot of weird sensations in their body when they meditate. Has anyone noticed that? Just all kinds of strange phenomena arise when you're just sitting still. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit tonight. First, why the body is so critical in this particular practice. And to talk about some of the classical anchors and explore some ways to experience them in a way that might be a little bit more fresh. And to talk a little bit about how energy arises in the body and what arises from that energetic experience. And then how do you work with it? How do you work with all this weirdness that occurs when you're just sitting still doing nothing? I feel very, very lucky in that I learned meditation when I was 15. I learned transcendental meditation, which was the only form of meditation I ever heard of. And for many years, I thought I didn't know there were even any other techniques. But I was very into transcendental meditation, of mantra meditation. For many, many years, I did lots of trainings and so forth. At one point, I thought I was going to teach mantra. In their teaching, they have this little teaching example they use of how you're driving down the road in your car and you're thinking, you know what would be better than this car would be a Corvette. You know, if I had a Corvette. And it would really be better than that would be driving my Corvette, listening to my favorite radio station. And, you know, what would be even better than that would be someone really attractive in the seat next to me. Yeah. You know what would be even better than that would be if that person was attracted to me as we're driving down there. You know what would even be better than that would be two attractive people in the car as I'm driving around in my Corvette with my radio. And you know what would even be better than that would be if one of them was giving me a neck massage as I'm driving my Corvette down the road listening to my favorite radio station. And the point is basically the mind just wants more. It's just the nature of the mind. It wants more and more in ever-increasing quantities forever and ever. That's just the nature of it. And so as we observe this nature of the mind wanting more, it's quite clear when you look at different spiritual traditions that what really messes your life up is desire. It's just wanting. And desire sets the whole wheel in motion. So some people in different traditions looked at this and said, well, here's the solution. Let's kill desire. Let's just eliminate desire, and then everything will be okay. So when you look at different spiritual traditions and different cultures, they all have different approaches in this relationship to the body and desire. You know, the flesh is weak. You know, the flesh needs to be overcome. So let's deny the body. Let's deny pleasure. For many, many years, I lived in an ashram. We did a lot of intensive practices. I had a celibacy vow for almost 7 years. And there, the whole model was, well, that sexual energy, it's like riding an elevator. You know, don't get off on the first floor, move it up to the sixth and seventh floor. The whole idea there is, you know, the halo around a saint's head is sexual energy transformed. So the whole idea there was like, deny, 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 move it up, move it up. And I have to say, it was an amazing practice to be practicing celibacy in my 20s and 30s. I learned a lot. I really got to see in my 20s and 30s how my sense of identity, you know, my internal posturing. Oh, if I say this and they say that, maybe it means this. And you remove all of that, it's quite powerful. And then I saw how many people I absolutely would have pursued, but I never would have had the emotional maturity to maintain a relationship. And these people became good friends. It was very powerful, and I'm delighted it's over. But if you look around, Catholic priests, monks, nuns, renunciates, this whole idea of don't go into the world because it's just going to distract you and it's going to feed desire. So pull away from the world because the world is just full of illusion. And then you can kind of stay safe. So don't go there and don't go into that sexual energy stuff. Someone said, I was raised in North Texas and I learned that sex is the most vile, disgusting thing in the world, so you should save it for someone you really love. So it's interesting when you look at the Buddha's life, whether you see it as one man living his life or the metaphor or the allegory, that when he had his calling to wake up, he moved into practices of denial. Those are kind of the practice of yoga at that time. There was no spandex. It was all about deny the body. It was all about pushing the body beyond its limits and then having transcendent experiences. But it was all about extremes. You know, deny the body food. You know, put the body into stress positions for long periods of time. It's somewhat akin, this may not be correct, but somewhat akin as I imagine it to a lot of the Native American ceremonies where they do the piercings, you know, where you sort of like dance ecstatically and then there's a release, a kind of a transcendent moment. So he gave himself to those practices of denial. And he realized, in my understanding, that there were transcendent experiences, but they weren't liberating experiences. So he explored more, kind of going beyond that. This cultivation of the middle way, where he said something to the effect of, if you think that you can gain full awakening by denying the senses, that you may find that doesn't work. But if you think that you can gain enlightenment by indulging the senses, that may not work either. So this articulation of the middle way, not too tight, not too loose, becomes really, really integral to our practice. And so we have this experience of the body, and just as in this meditation we did, when the mind wanders, you bring it back. And what do you bring it back to? You bring it back to your breath, or to sound, or to the feeling in the body. Now, there are other techniques that might have you focus more on a mantra or a visualization. But this particular approach, it's sense-based. It's about being aware of the body. So why the body? The Buddha said something to the effect of, everything you want to know about reality will be revealed through this body. Everything you want to know, the awakening of the cosmos, the cessation of the cosmos, is all here. How does that happen? How does that happen by bringing your attention back to the breath? So a very powerful exploration of this practice is this gathering of attention. So being aware of the breath. But a real misunderstanding of meditation is when people think it's only about being aware of the breath. That's one form of practice. That's concentration practice. Concentration is very powerful. It'll bring you back. It'll develop real potency in the present moment. But as I like to say, there are a lot of concentrated people on this planet who are miserable. There's not the awakening faculty. So there's this beautiful articulation of the foundations of awareness. On this very first foundation is its energy. It's life force, prana, chi, ki, Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it. It's the waves and particles that make the difference between your body being a corpse and being alive right now. So we bring our attention back to that fundamental sense of aliveness, the raw data of aliveness in the body. And if you do that, and you kind of hang out there, you'll begin to notice that something arises out of that. There's a feeling tone. Without you being aware of it, you will become aware of what's called Vedana. And Vedana is the feeling tone. So that raw data of energy will be experienced in one of three categories. It'll be all the unpleasant experiences, all the pleasant experiences, and then everything in between. So pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And without even being aware of that, quite often, you'll notice how your mind will immediately go into thought forms. Ooh, I really like this. I wonder if I could keep this, if I could hang on to this. This is really terrible. How do I nuke it? How do I make it go away? Or if it's neutral, you're just like, I'm bored. So you can be aware of this raw data of energy. You can be aware of the feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. You can be aware of your relationship to the feeling tone, the pushing away, the grasping, the boredom. You can become aware of the thoughts that arise out of reacting to that feeling tone. And then the fourth foundation is you start to become aware of sort of like the categories of thoughts. Oh, here are all the thoughts that have to do around aversion. Oh, here are all the thoughts that have to do with craving and fantasy and planning and wanting. Oh, here's the collection of thoughts that have to do with worry and anxiety. Oh, here are all the thoughts that have to do with depression and sleepiness. Here are all the thoughts that have to do with doubt and fear. So all of these, all of the lists fall in this fourth category of, you know, the Four Noble Truths, the Five Hindrances, the Seven Factors of Awakening, is recognizing the patterns of thoughts. Another way to think of it, which I find very helpful, is sort of this chain of causality of how your experience arises out of this raw data of here and now. Is there's this raw data, it's got a feeling tone, you react to it, then you have a thought. If you think the same thought over and over and over and over again, that thought will calcify into a belief. If you're not aware of the beliefs in your life, they form your habits. If you're not aware of your habits, they form your character. And if you're not aware of your character, that becomes your destiny. And so we can pay attention on all these different levels. You can pay attention to your beliefs, to your thoughts. You can look at your habits. Or you can come right back to the very, very foundation of it all. And it happens so fast. Most of the time, we're not even aware of how we're reacting. It's stimulus and response. It's just like a pinball machine. And that's the power of this practice. When you slow things down a little bit, you begin to slow down the stimulus and the response, that this gap begins to open up. And the difference with that gap opening up is the difference between reacting like you've always reacted to life and actually having a choice of how you respond. So as you were sitting in meditation, you know, maybe you noticed your chair squeaking. And then maybe you had a thought form arise, like, who chose these chairs? Okay, this is personal. I've had that thought. And then you realize, oh, this is an aversive thought. You know, so there's sensation, and then there's a thought, then the recognition of the thought, and the recognition of the type of thought. That's kind of how this practice of self-observation without judgment works. So there are many, many different approaches. This is an embodied approach. Other approaches in meditation, they might use mantra, which is more mental. They might use visualization, which is, again, more of a mental technique. But I find there's something very, very powerful about this fundamental training in learning how to be awake to this raw data of here and now. It's quite profound. Pema Chodron tells the story of how when she first started meditation, and from what I heard, she was once asked by someone in the media, well, what started you meditating? And she said, oh, that's easy. I hated my husband. That's usually what gets us going. You know, there's some kind of suffering that kind of gets our attention that we want to do something about. But as she described her initial instruction in meditation, she was told, okay, so what you want to do is relax and close your eyes and bring your awareness to your breath. And when the mind wanders, you bring it back to your breath. So the first meditation, you know, after 45 minutes, the bell rang, and she realized she never once thought of her breath. But as the day went on, she was able to kind of sustain attention on her breath a little bit more. And at the end of the day, she went back to her teacher, and she said, okay, I think I got it. I think I'm ready for the next level of instruction. The teacher smiled and said, okay, you want to close your eyes and bring your awareness to your breath. And when your mind wanders, bring it back to the breath. That's the next level. Have you noticed in your practice how dry the meditation can become at times? I notice sometimes in my own practice that I'll be aware of a thought and I'll realize, oh yes, I need to be aware of my breath, but I'm thinking about my breath rather than actually experiencing my breath. And it's a real training, I find, because what we're cultivating is this very, very deep intimacy with the aliveness of what's right here and right now. So I thought I might lead a short meditation and as a way of kind of revisiting these anchors and just sensing how fresh you can experience it. So if you like, you can close your eyes. I always love the sound of it. There's an element of loving the sound of the chairs that's settling in. It's, you know you're really up for something when that happens. So as you close the eyes, notice as you feel your breath, and just notice how effortless the breath is. The more you relax the breath, can you really sense how the body is breathing all by itself? And if you notice the breath at your belly, just for a few moments here, you'll notice how the belly will rise on the in-breath and fall on the out-breath. But you may also notice how the more you can soften your belly, it becomes a doorway to feeling the breath even more intimately here. Over these next few rounds of breath, is it possible to soften the belly even more? This undefended belly. You might imagine the belly of a 2-year-old just hanging out there undefended. If you sense the breath in the nostrils, you may notice how you may feel it more intensely right at the septum. Can you sense the breath at the rim of the nostrils? And this is really subtle, but can you sense a temperature differential between the inhalation and the exhalation? And even more subtle now, is it possible to feel the breath on the outside of your body? That is to say, a little patch of skin just below each nostril. Is it possible to feel the sense of the lungs moving against the back of the rib cage? And just notice, over the last 2 minutes of training your attention on the breath, what is the quality of presence right now? Another powerful anchor is this, the anchor of sound, and you might take a moment to let your awareness open to the sounds around you. And again, here you may notice how the sounds are happening without any effort on your part. Can you identify and experience the sounds that are the closest to you? And is it possible to sense the sounds that are on the very furthest edge of your capacity to hear? And you may notice that there's a quality of listening here. There's a quality of listening through the mind, where your mind will automatically determine the location of the sound, the name of the sound. There's also a factor of determining whether it's in danger or not. There's another quality of listening, which is sometimes described as bare attention, and that is to listen and feel the vibration of the sound without a label, without a past or a future. Sound vibration. Noticing that you cannot hear better by trying harder, but instead opening to a sense of receptivity. And yet another anchor that many find helpful is this sense of aliveness in the palms, fingers, and thumbs. And you might, now if you like, let your awareness just flood into your palms, into the fingers and thumbs. Soften and relax the hands. And notice how intimately you can detect any aliveness here. Pulse, or tingling, vibration, and subtle energy flowing. Again, it's all happening by itself. A sense of receiving the sensations as they're happening. We'll take one more minute in silence. How intimately can you receive this moment? And you might now begin to lengthen the breath a little bit. And with your eyes closed, you might let your head drift a little bit to the left and right. Just sensing the movement from the inside. And then take a moment to stretch and adjust your posture in any way that feels good. And if you like, you can open the eyes or you can remain with them closed. You can almost view our practice as there are kind of two elements in any given moment. One is the whole cognitive process going on, and the other one is the actual experience of here and now. So in many ways, it's relatively simple. Am I identifying with the thought process, or am I streaming attention to the energetic experience of here and now? And I find from time to time that sense of just inquiring how much more intimately can I arrive can be helpful. As you practice, as you develop this capacity to sustain attention on this moment-to-moment-to-moment awareness of aliveness in the here and now, a lot begins to arise from there. And this is vipassana. This is the arising of the witness, of non-judging awareness. This noting faculty of recognizing everything that's changing in your life, noticing how you're relating to what's changing, sensing the flow, the stream, noticing the thoughts, and noticing how many of your thoughts are patterns and the familiarity of those patterns. You begin to see into all of your conditioning. All of it begins to be revealed over time. That's why we always joke of how when you meditate, you'll feel better. You feel your sadness better, your rage better, your depression better. That's all part of the unwinding. But you also feel your joy and your compassion and your empathy better as well. So again and again, when you practice in this tradition, you're invited to come back to the body. Be aware of the breath as you're breathing. Be aware of walking as you're walking. Be aware of eating as you're eating. Notice Vedana and how you're relating to it. And it's a very interesting teacher by the name of Uttejaniya. And when you practice with him, it's not so much about sitting this long and doing these particular practices, but it's 24/7. Notice your relationship to that feeling tone. Notice the arising of unpleasant, pleasant, and neutral. And notice how you're relating to it. When I've practiced this, it's almost like there's this little meter. Oh, I like it, I don't like it. I like it, I don't like it. And it's constantly moving. We're always reacting on subtle, subtle, subtle levels. So the practice is to relax and soften and be aware. But an interesting thing happens. The analogy that we use a lot is to imagine a big circle. There's a line running through that circle. Above the line is everything you're aware of. Below the circle is everything you're not aware of. And when you relax and soften and pay attention, that line moves. You start to feel things you hadn't felt before. You begin to notice things you hadn't noticed before. Everything unseen and unfelt and undigested in your life is now suddenly, this light of awareness is beginning to shine on it. And that's when things get funky in your practice. Because you start to feel what's below the line. The unfelt, unseen stuff. The line dramatically moves. There's someone who was sitting a long retreat, one of our 7-day practices in silence. You know, sitting, walking, meals in there too. And he kept feeling this strong sensation arise in his belly. And for a while he thought, well, maybe it was his digestion, maybe he wasn't eating right, but it just kind of kept coming up. And so he tried going for walks and drinking more water, but whenever he would really settle, there was just sort of this clench that would arise from his kind of guts right up into his stomach. And he kind of kept pushing it away. There was something about it that was really not pleasant at all. So that feeling tone of unpleasant got very, very strong. And you may be familiar with the practice of rain, which is just fundamental meditation as a transformative tool. You know, to recognize or realize what's arising, and then to inquire, can you allow it? Can you accept what's here? Sometimes you can't, because sometimes what's below the line can be too much to be with. So it's very strategic to ask that question, do I feel safe being with this? If you do have a sense of yes, I can be with it, then you move into the I to investigate, to really sense, where do you feel it? To really draw it closer, to have tea with that phenomena. And then the end is to nurture what you find with empathy and compassion. And so after a period of time, as this kept arising and arising and arising, you thought, okay, can I be with it? I'll give it a shot. And so he began to just explore these sensations, which felt somewhat familiar, but also a little terrifying. So he continued to bring some empathy and compassion to it. And then at one point, he could feel it kind of getting stronger. And he asked a question, which sometimes can be an interesting way to kind of get a handle on what's arising from below the line. This feeling that was so strong, he said, well, how old is this feeling? How long has this been here? And suddenly, he flashed on this memory. When he was 6 years old, his twin brother was hit and killed by a car. And his family could not process it. And he had such intense survivor's guilt that he just kind of drove it in and locked it away inside. Of course, as you can imagine, unlocking that, there was a lot more to that. You know, all the ways of recognizing, allowing, making room for it, accommodating it, calling on compassion. But it was a powerful, transformative experience. And he realized how many times in his life that feeling tone would arise and he would feel it and then just clamp it right back down again. So the question becomes, how do you work with this stuff when it arises? It's not always super dramatic stuff, but quite often there's phenomena that shows up in the body. There's a very interesting way to sit that has really been powerful for me in my own practice. What's so interesting, and there's a wonderful book called Unlearning Meditation by Jason Siff. And he says, and when I first read this, I thought, oh, come on. But he said, you can find any meditative tradition. You can find another meditative tradition that will give you exactly the opposite instructions. And it's, from what I can tell, it's pretty true. Meditate with your eyes closed. No. Meditate with your eyes open. Well, your hands should be facing up, being receptive. No, they should be down. You know, showing you're grounded, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when it comes to sitting with your body, there's one approach to meditation that's called the Aditan practice, or the sitting of strong determination, where you sit with a very strong determination not to move. I've done this practice on intensive retreats, and sometimes they're powerful breakthroughs, you know, because things arise and you hold that witness and you develop that incredible kind of rigor and resilience and you realize that you're more than just this body. And most of the time, it's unbelievably excruciating. But I really want to honor a teacher by the name of Reggie Ray, who teaches in the Shambhala tradition. And he offered this little practice that I find very, very helpful. And it's really meditating with the body. And here's kind of how I view it. This is my own personal, potentially completely distorted perspective. But as we're meditating, we kind of get hijacked by our stories. And so we go off into the story. And at some point, there's something wakes up and we realize, oh, I'm having this thought. And as soon as you wake up and you realize you're having that thought, for a moment, you're without a story. And there's some kind of a letting go that occurs. You're letting go of the story, and for maybe a millisecond, you're sensing who you are without a story. Now, back in my TM days, my transcendental meditation days, they called that process unstressing. So you get lost in a thought, there's a form of stress, you let it go, and you just unstressed. You just let go of something. Now, if we really are a mind-body matrix, you know, that what you think and what you feel lives on the inside, how could you not let go of a story and have some corresponding letting go in the body? So it seems utterly organic that your body would want to move in meditation. And so this practice is around really meditating with the body and letting the body move, making a conscious decision to kind of move and flow with the body. Now, a question I'm sometimes asked is, if my nose itches, is it legal to scratch it? Which is a really deep question. And the Aditan approach would say, no. Just watch it. Watch watch that quality of Vedana, watch the unpleasant, and watch it really, really burn, and you're going to see it's filled with impermanence. At some point, it's going to just move and change, and you remain kind of the observer of that phenomena changing. That's a powerful experience. But what I find really helpful is when your nose is itching in meditation, first you'll notice the catastrophizing. You know, if I don't scratch my nose, I'm going to start screaming at the top of my lungs. When you hit that point, what you can do is make a conscious decision to move. And then that becomes part of your meditation. Then you can feel your hand rising up. And you can feel like the anticipation. And then there's the scratch. And then you can watch the unpleasant morph into pleasant. Or maybe into neutral. And then you feel the hand come down. And then something else unpleasant will come up for you to work with. But suddenly it makes it this very intimate experience with the body. So I'd like to offer again just a short little meditation on this, if you like. You can close your eyes. And it's helpful to kind of bring a sense of alertness to the body. So you might even bring your back away from the back of your chair. And you can bring your hands to the tops of your thighs, if you like. And just take a moment to sense this deep listening presence to your body. And there can even be a quality of kindness here. You're not trying to override the body. You're really with the body. We'll just take a minute and just sense if there's an inclination your body wants to move. Find a way to say yes to it and to kind of be with it, however it may want to shift. And can you sense a quality of kind attention here? Meditating with the body. And then now deepening your breath. And if you like, you can open your eyes or you can remain with them closed. Is that helpful? It's a wonderful little distinction I find helpful for myself. So one model of looking at this aspect of meditating with the body, kind of informed through the kind of the yoga philosophy, is it kind of says that you're a being of energy, but you're also this being of awareness. And there's this relationship between energy and awareness. And most of the time, awareness dominates energy. So we kind of override what we're feeling. And the classic examples I like to give are you're working on your computer and you get this faint little signal from your body that says, I need to pee. And the mind says, let me just finish it, we'll do it later. And then the sensations are so strong, you run. Or it's late at night, you get this little signal from the body that says, now would be a really good time to go to sleep. And the mind goes, oh, Daily Show's on in 5 minutes. Or you go out to a really wonderful restaurant. I'm really looking forward to it. And at some point, the body, this wisdom of the body says, hey, I have just achieved optimal nutrition intake right now. The mind says, we haven't even looked at the dessert menu. So we tend to override life force all the time. And when you really begin to listen to the body, it will begin to give you messages, which is quite often, if you've ever had the whiplash meditation experience, where you're having that, your body is letting you know. Quite often it's biological. You're depleted, you're exhausted. So it's very interesting how the body will start to unwind when you really relax and pay attention. My dog had had surgery, kind of replacing what would be the ACL or something. As he kind of came out of surgery and it was in the back of the car, and then he kind of woke up out of it and he started violently shaking. Just violently, and then he was fine. And as you may know from trauma research, that's something that the animals tend to do when they're in trauma, they shake. And doing trauma work, there's sort of this organic shaking process that happens in the body. This organic intelligence of the body kind of throws off that tension. And to some degree, that's what happens when you listen deeply to your body. You begin to unwind. So quite often, people will tell me about experiences that they're having in meditation that sometimes feel extremely disorienting. And some of them are really just a sign of moving into a different brainwave state. The normal brainwave state, where we're walking and talking and driving cars, hopefully, is the beta level of brainwave activity, which is the linear rational mind, comparing, judging, figuring things out. So it's very, very mind-oriented. As soon as you begin to become more aware of your body, you're entraining attention on the sensations, you're moving into the alpha state, for alpha state relaxation. You can feel more relaxed, you might feel a little bit more trancy, you're a little bit more aware of the field of thoughts as they're arising. A sense of relaxation that can occur, more present moment. Animals live in the alpha state, which is why it's so cool to hang out with animals. We just kind of start resonating in the present moment with them. But if you stay with that sort of body awareness, you'll naturally begin to move into the theta brainwaves, which are the brainwaves of sleep. And two things occur when you sleep. There's spatial and temporal distortion, or time and space just fall away. So you wake up in the morning, I'm back, and then what time is it? Time and space disappeared. When you're practicing deep relaxation with awareness, it's quite often you can experience those theta brainwaves, the brainwaves of sleep, and be alert and still be awake. So if you ever had the experience of feeling your body feels like it weighs 2 tons, or it feels very, very light, or maybe you can't really feel your body, or your hands feel really, really light, or your tongue feels really thick. Or it may even feel like, have you ever had an experience where you feel like you're sort of tilted? That can be a sign of being in that sort of non-ordinary state of the theta brainwaves. And it's very interesting, if you look at some of the classic relaxation techniques, like autogenic training, you're actually repeating, my arms feel heavy. My arms feel heavy. My forehead feels cool. My pulse feels strong and regular. There are ways you kind of invoke that that quality of relaxation, but it will oftentimes happen organically. Have you ever had the experience of your body starting to sway from side to side? Again, that's kind of a common occurrence that can occur, either swaying from side to side or kind of back and forth. And, you know, the experience of davening, you know, if you see like at the Wailing Wall, oftentimes people will be rocking back and forth. My sense of that, like, that was organic, and then it sort of became part of the tradition. Sometimes people feel tickling sensations or kind of twitching sensations or waves of energy moving through. All of this it's not uncommon. You know, if it occurs for you, just to trust that this is quite often kind of a natural phenomena of the body settling and releasing tension. If you find yourself experiencing sensations that feel very, very strong and unpleasant, again, we go back to this practice of rain, of recognizing or realizing there's something challenging here. Again, that question of asking, can I allow this? Does it feel safe to be with us? It's a very, very important part of this practice. It's not about muscling through unpleasant sensations. And sometimes the most strategic thing you can do is to let that know you see it. And let it know another time when the conditions are different, your intention is to be with it. But you can shift your attention somewhere else or get a cup of tea and maybe find a way to kind of revisit that as that occurs. And it oftentimes brings up a very powerful question around these practices. And that is, how much do you try to make your experience happen? And how much do you just allow your experience to happen? And again, it comes back to the middle way. Not too tight, not too loose. And you may find, depending on where your middle way lives, that you may find that there are times when more willful practice is really what's called for. To really focus on the breath. If you're really scattered or over-emotional, a concentration practice will help to really bring your attention back. And there are other times when you feel kind of present, you might explore more of that allowing, open awareness. What I find so interesting about these practices is that as you develop your understanding of how your body works, how your mind works, and you realize there are all these very different techniques, there are all contradictory techniques in many, many ways, that this is really your path. As the Buddha said, you know, finding your path is your path. So to explore these techniques and sense what really resonates for you, and knowing that there'll be times when one technique will really help to bring you back to that middle way, and other times it'll be absolutely ineffective. And it really, really brings us kind of finally to kind of the guidelines for how to work this stuff if you're not living full time in a monastery, where it's all built in. Because when you really want to wake up, everything that isn't awake is going to come into your experience. Just like when you're practicing, okay, I'm going to be moment to moment aware of my breath. Well, guess what? You're going to notice every way you're not aware of your breath. You know, I'm going to focus on the heart practices. Guess what? You're going to notice how mean and petty you are. That's what these practices do. They reveal this. So when you really want to wake up, number one, to have some formal ritual practice where you can really engage, and times of intensive practice and times of study to explore new techniques and try new things on, to step away from the habits of your life. And the third, and maybe the most valuable, is to find like-minded people. It's why I moved into an ashram and stayed for 24 years. Like, oh my gosh, there are other people who really are interested in this. Because inevitably, I'm sure you have found this in your life, that when you're sharing about the discoveries of your own practice, and you're listening to other people about what they're learning, that there'll be something in their discovery that's going to inform you in some way. And as you share the radiance of your own practice, that will inform and inspire other people. And that's really the magic of this path, that this internal work is very alone, but we have this capacity to be alone together, which is just the coolest. Why don't we close with a very short yet brief meditation? Might take a moment just to close the eyes and feel this movement of the breath on the inside. Feel the sound vibrations around you. And feel the sense of aliveness in the body. And you might just take a few moments to listen deeply to this body, just to acknowledge, maybe to appreciate how this body has served you as best it can. And to honor this call that has called you to practice. The possibility of awakening the heart, awakening the mind. Wishing yourself well, and letting that well-wishing, just for a few moments, expand in all directions to all beings, including yourself. And as you're ready, you can deepen your breath. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Thank you for your time and attention. May you and your body have a wonderful evening together.